You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
You guys ready for our third and final day of XSI? You got some energy left? Keep learning, keep taking it all in. It has been a great week so far. We are so grateful that you've returned for the third day. I got word last night that there was not a parking spot left here or at our satellite campus. So people have been excited. Yeah, that is awesome. So we hope that God is speaking to you, that you continue to learn and take in new information and engage on new ideas. It's been really exciting. So let me open us up in some prayer. Father, thank you so much. We are so grateful just for all that has gone on this week already, for how you have carried us through the last couple of days, how you've spoken through our speakers and divinely spoken to us, Lord. Let us not lose momentum as we enter this third and final day, but stay really engaged. Keep hearing from you. Keep serving and pouring out into others that you have around us this week. We just pray for a really edifying and uplifting time today, Lord. Amen. Awesome. So how will they hear the good news at home and abroad? Continuing through that topic today. We've got a few things in store. We got our breakout sessions that start at 11 a.m. You see those on the screen. So if you've yet to choose where you're going, you got your options there. And then we also have breakouts at 2 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. We also want to get your feedback. So if you have not yet, please go ahead and scan the QR code. We usually say put your cell phones away and silence them. This is the time where you can take them out. Scan this QR code, choose your breakout session, and give feedback on what you thought about it so the team can continue to improve these next year. We'd appreciate that. We also have the bookstore out in the lobby. If you are a regular and astute XSI attender, you know that you wait the third day to buy books because there's a 20% off discount every year. So it's not much of a surprise. But if you haven't gotten your books yet at the bookstore, 20% off, go check that out. I was scanning and perusing this morning, and there's some really awesome books out there. You guys should definitely check it out. So without any further ado, you guys want to hear from Sam again? What'd you think of last night? You did pretty well. You did pretty well. So I'm going to introduce Ben Faust, senior leader and teacher at Dwell, who's going to bring up Sam for us again. Let's hear it for Ben.
All right. Good morning, everybody. So I get to introduce Sam Chan. Sam Chan is a lead mentor and trainer at EVQ School of Evangelism, which is a ministry of City Bible Forum in Australia. Originally trained as a doctor, Sam received his PhD from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. He's also the author of several books, including Evangelism in a Skeptical World and How to Talk About Jesus Without Being That Guy. Some friends of mine read How to Talk About Jesus this spring together in our men's group to get ready for this conference. And I got to tell you, it just led to so many awesome discussions, so many great nights. I'm really excited. Sam's got the qualities of an evangelist. He is winsome. He is down to earth. He is real. And most importantly, he has the conviction that Jesus is who people need. So let's get Sam up here.
Thanks, Ben. Well, I love coming to the USA, and I love baseball. I love the way you guys do baseball, and I love the way you guys do the rally cap. And we all know what the rally cap is. When your team is losing, you grab your normal cap, and then you put it on maybe sideways, upside down, inside out. Because what the rally cap says is this: we need to flip things around, because whatever we're doing right now is not working. So we need to try something else. Maybe flip things around inside out, upside down. But maybe that's how life feels right now. Whatever we're doing is not working. We're doing everything they told us to do. We're doing everything we can to be happy, but somehow it's not working. We're miserable, we're exhausted, and we're tired. So maybe we too need to flip things around upside down. So today I want to look at unleashing the power of paradox, flipping the script on an upside down world, because whatever we're doing is not working. So maybe there's a paradox that we need to expose, unleash, and flip. And in particular, I want to look at this, the paradox of happiness. And I'm going to do this by looking at a story that Jesus tells in the pages of the Bible. And I'm using a story from Jesus because usually when Jesus tells a story, there's a paradox in the story. And Jesus uses the paradox to flip our script upside down, the right way back up. And our question today is this, well, what do I have to do to be happy? And to answer this, I'm going to look at a strange story that we rarely hear in the Bible. And it's a strange story where Jesus tells a story of a dishonest manager. And this manager, he does follow the script. But in the story, there will be a paradox. And Jesus is going to use this paradox to flip the script for us. So let's begin. What is the script? How can I be happy? This is what we get told. You got to do whatever it takes to be happy. Now, I forgot to warn you, this is going to be a 30-minute talk from me where I answer the question, how can we be happy? And it'll be followed by question and answer from you guys. So as I'm speaking, think of whatever question you want to ask, text it to that number, and I'll do my best to answer that question when this talk is over. So what do we have to do to be happy? Well, the script we're told is this. You got to do whatever it takes to be happy. Let's look at the story. Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager, the dishonest manager, was accused of wasting his possessions. So we meet this manager who's dishonest, but why not? Because you got to do whatever it takes to be happy. He's following the script that we too have been given. And we can't blame him, because how would you complete this? How would you complete this? Well, it's already completed. I want my children to be happy, of course. But I love it when I go to an Asian church. I go to a Chinese church. And whenever I do this, I go, no, it's successful. And I go, no. The reason why you came to the West was because you want your children to be happy. If you wanted your children to be successful, a doctor, a lawyer, you should have stayed in Asia, but you came here to the West because this is the script of the Western world. I want my children to be happy. And that's a whole script of the United States of America, because there in the USA Declaration of Independence, it says this, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This nation was founded on this principle. This nation fought a war to break away from Europe so it could pursue happiness on its own terms. The whole foundation of Western democracy is we need to pursue happiness on our own terms. And it's a great storyline. It's the reason why philosophers come up with this position called utilitarianism, the greatest good for the greatest number of people. But how do we define good? Well, it's whatever creates maximum pleasure, whatever creates maximum happy. So we judge an action as morally good if it makes us happy, and we judge an action to be morally bad if it makes us unhappy. We're meant to pursue happiness on our own terms. It's the reason why when you see your high school counselor and you ask her, what job should I do? Well, if you're in Asia, she would say, well, what do your parents want you to do? But if you're in the West, she will say, well, what do you want to do? Do whatever makes you happy. And it's a great storyline. It is the reason why you can date whoever you want, not who mum and dad want you to date. It's the reason why you can live in whatever city you want, not where mum and dad grew up. It's the reason why you can choose the job you want, not the job that mum and dad want you to do. It's a great storyline. Only you can choose. You do whatever makes you happy. But if it's such a good storyline, why? Why are we miserable, exhausted, and tired? Why? Because there is a paradox. And the paradox of this, of happiness, is this. If I'm trying to be happy, well, why aren't I happy? Let's go back to the story. So the rich man called in this dishonest manager and he asked him, "What is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management because you cannot be manager any longer." The manager said to himself, "Well, what shall I do now? My boss is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig and I'm ashamed to beg." The wheels fall off. This man does whatever it takes to be happy, but somehow his life falls apart. He's unhappy. What's going on here? Well, this is the paradox of happiness. And there are at least three things going on here. Paradox number one is what we call hedonic adaptation. Well, what is hedonic adaptation? This is hedonic adaptation. When I first wake up in the morning, I make myself a cup of coffee, and when I drink it, the buzz just fills me from top to toe. But about 10 in the morning, I have my second cup of coffee, and this time there's a little bit of buzz, but not so much. And at 2 in the afternoon, when there's a staff meeting, I have my third cup of coffee, and this time, no buzz. What is going on? My body has adapted to the coffee. It has recalibrated to the coffee and adjusted to it as if it is the new normal. So it has no effect on me anymore. This is what goes on with hedonic adaptation. It is the reason when you push a kid on a swing, the kid keeps saying, "Higher, higher, higher, higher," until you get the kids almost horizontal and almost looping the loop, and they're still saying, "Higher, higher," because they have adapted to it as a new norm. They need you to go higher. It is the reason why when you were a little child, you would beg your parents to get you the new toy. But your parents would always say, "You're only gonna get sick of it." But you would say, "No, not this time. This time for sure, I will never get sick of this toy." So your parents buy you the toy, but you get sick of it. You've adjusted to it as if it was a new normal. This goes on all the time. This is Jonathan Haidt, writer, speaker, author, psychologist, in his book, The Happiness Hypothesis, a secular atheist writer. But he talks about the hedonic adaptation. He says whatever gives you a burst of happiness, it lasts about 1-2 years at the most, and then you're back to where you were before. So Jonathan Haidt says, hey, you can get a new car and you get a burst of happiness. You can get a new job and there'll be a burst of happiness. You can get a new romantic partner and there'll be a burst of happiness, but it only lasts 1 or 2 years at the most, and you're back to where you were before. In Germany, they did this study, and it's called the marriage life satisfaction curve. Have a look at how the marriage life satisfaction curve works. So you get married in the middle of that curve, right in the middle on the x-axis. Happiness is the vertical y-axis. So 4 years before you got married, you were single. You were rumbling along at 3 out of 10 when it came to happiness. Then you meet someone 2 years before you get married. Woo! Bing! Now you're happy, 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 happy. On the day you get married, you are the happiest you will ever be. 7 out of 10. Right after getting married, poof, it is like a vertical cliff. You could, you're free falling from there. 2 years later, you are back to where you were before. 5 years later, you're less happy than you were before you got married. I love showing this graph. because everyone wants to laugh. Because it is funny, but every married guy is sitting there just rigid right now, too afraid to laugh, aren't you? And your wife keeps looking at you like, is that you? Is that you? You go, no. That is a German study. I'm American. But we adapted to the new norm. We recalibrated. Paradox number two, it's called the arrival fallacy. And I'm getting this from Arthur C. Brooks, writer, podcaster, author, especially writes in The Atlantic. He talks about how to build a happy life. And he talks about the arrival fallacy. And he says, chasing happiness, well, it's like the dog chasing the car. The dog chases the car, but when the dog gets the car, now the dog doesn't know what to do. And it's the same. We pursue, we chase happiness, but once we find what we're looking for, we think, is that it? This is Jill Stark. She wrote this book, Happy Never After. And it's described her experience where she wrote a previous book, which became, boom, a success. It was a top 10 bestseller. And when she wrote this book and when it succeeded, at that moment, she went, is that it? Is that all it is? I thought it would be something more. And then it sent her spiraling into anxiety and depression. Happy never after. And apparently this is very common for writers because they invest their life, years into this work. They launch it, it succeeds, but that's as happy as they will ever be. And they thought, it will be something more. Paradox number three is this, is what we call the hedonic fallacy. The hedonic fallacy is this. Philosophers say, if you chase happiness, you will not find it. That's the hedonic fallacy. By trying to find happiness, you're guaranteed not to find happiness. Why? Because happiness is the byproduct of something else. So you actually can't find happiness by chasing happiness itself. I was listening to National Public Radio and they interviewed a lady in her 20s. And this is what she said. We grew up with our parents saying, we just want you to be happy. Be happy, they said. I mean, if your parents tell you to get a job and make money, at least you know when you've achieved those things. But we grew up with our parents saying, we just want you to be happy. So you end up sitting around being like, well, did I do this thing that my parents told me to do? Like, am I happy? Have I achieved it yet? You're anxious because your parents essentially said to you, the most important thing is for you to be happy. You chase it and chase it, and the chase itself trips you up and makes you less happy. By looking for happiness, we end up less happy. That's the hedonic fallacy. So what can we do? Well, we need to flip the script. And here we flip the script by saying, you know what? It's not about happiness. Maybe we've been chasing the wrong thing. It's not about happiness. And let's have a look at the story then. The manager said to himself, I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his boss's debtors and he asked the first, well, how much do you owe my boss? 900 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, psst, take your bill, sit down quickly, make it 450. Then the manager asked the second, and how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied, and the manager told him, take your bill, make it 800. The boss commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly, wisely. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves so that when it's gone, you'd be welcomed into eternal dwellings. Now, notice what Jesus is saying here. He's not saying, be dishonest like the dishonest manager. What Jesus is saying here is, if the dishonest manager can work it out, surely you people who are honest, you too can work it out. So what is it that we're meant to work out? What has a dishonest manager done? How has he flipped the script? How has he changed his value system? What is he chasing now instead? Well, flip number one, it's actually not about happiness. It's about relationships. That's the first flip. It's not about happiness. We shouldn't be chasing happiness. We should be chasing relationships instead. Now, think about all the things that give us pleasure. Oh, eating gives us pleasure. Imagine eating a stack of pancakes drowned in maple syrup. See, that's making us happy. Imagine watching a movie. That makes us happy. Imagine traveling. That makes us happy. But did you notice with all these things that make us happy, they're only happy if we do them with someone. They're actually quite miserable to do if you're by yourself. And so if you do eat a stack of pancakes by yourself, you end up taking a picture of it, uploading on social media. Hey, look what I'm doing. And everyone says, hey, yes, look what you're doing. So you're sharing the moment. So you're not eating by yourself. If you travel by yourself, you're always taking selfies and people sharing the moment with you. It's not what we do that makes us happy. It's who we're doing it with that makes us happy. This is Sophie Scott in her TED Talk. She's a neuroscientist, What Makes Us Laugh. And she says we're 20 times more likely to laugh at something if we're in the company of someone we know, love and trust. It's not what we do, it's who we do it with, who we share the moment with that makes us happy. This is Robert Waldinger, not a Christian, in the most watched TED Talk of all time, and it's called What Makes a Good Life. And he references the famous Harvard study where they looked at the lives of 70 men over 70 years, and they traced their lives longitudinally, and they asked the question, well, what makes a good life? And they found that the number one correlation with happiness and a healthy life, the number one correlation with happiness was not whether you had paid off your house or not. The number one correlation with happiness was not whether you had $1 million or not. The number one correlation with happiness was not whether you were the CEO of a company or not. The number one correlation with happiness was, did you have somebody in your life to share it with? And we're not talking just about romantic relationships. We're talking about friendships. Are you lonely, or do you have someone to share your life with? It's not what we do, it's not what we own that makes us happy. It's, do I have someone to share this life with that makes us happy? Flip number two, it's actually not about happiness, it's about purpose. We shouldn't be chasing happiness, instead we should be chasing purpose. Now, when I grew up in Australia, I played a lot of rugby. I even played rugby when I was at college. I played rugby when I was doing PhD studies in Chicago. I love rugby. And I had a friend who also played rugby with me all these years. But one day, my friend stopped playing rugby. And his name was Alan. I said, Alan, what's going on? How come you're not playing rugby anymore? And Alan said, well, I was playing a game of rugby and we were in one of those scrum things and there was a big guy just standing on my head. And at that moment, I asked myself the question, why? Why am I doing this? I don't have to be doing this. So why am I doing this? And once I couldn't answer the why question, I just stopped doing it. See, we actually have to be able to answer the why question. Why am I doing this? We actually need a purpose, a reason for doing things. This is poor Dolan. He has a PhD in happiness, not a Christian. He's written this book, Happiness by Design. And he argues that it's actually not pleasure that makes us happy. It's purpose that makes us happy. He says, see, you can have pleasure and you can have purpose. And there are things that give us pleasure but no purpose, like eating pizza by yourself in front of the TV on a Friday night gives you pleasure. No purpose. So after a while, it feels a little bit empty and unfulfilling. But there are things that have purpose but no pleasure, like studying for an exam, helping a friend move house, giving birth to a child. Purpose, no pleasure, but they become very deeply fulfilling. It's purpose that we're looking for. This is the famous book, Man's Search for Meaning, by Viktor Frankl, Jewish Holocaust survivor, and he says we need purpose. He says we shouldn't look for suffering, but suffering will find us. And the only way to survive and navigate suffering is if we have purpose. Suffering will make us a better person, but only if we have purpose. And he gives the fictitious parable of the lives of two fictitious women. He says the first woman, through the fortunes of life, she is born beautiful, rich, and successful. Second woman, through the misfortunes of life, she gives birth to a child with profound disabilities. The first woman, at the end of her life, will ask herself, huh, what was all that about? I had a lot of money, I went to a lot of parties, I flirted with a lot of men, but huh, what was all that about? The second woman will say, wow, I raised a child with profound disabilities, and she will have a rich, fulfilling life because she lived not just for herself, but for someone else. She had a story bigger than just her own story. And that's what we need. We need a story bigger than just our own story. But where do we find this story that's bigger than just our own story? Well, we need purpose. But to have purpose, we need design. But to have design, we need a designer. To have a designer, we actually need a loving, personal God who's behind this universe. And that's what Jesus promises us. On the pages of the Bible, it says this, the Logos, which is a Greek word, the Logos became flesh and lived among us. And it's talking about Jesus. It's saying Jesus is the Logos. And the Greek word Logos can be translated so many ways. It's so rich with meaning. Usually our English Bibles call it the Word, and that's true, the Word became flesh. But it also means the story. Our bigger story became flesh. And it also means design. It's the design behind the universe. And Jesus is the designer who lives among us. So the Logos became flesh. The design became flesh and lived among us. Jesus is our bigger story that we should live for. So do you remember our original question? It was this. What? What do I have to do to be happy? And today we've looked at three things. Number one, we've looked at the script we get given. How can I be happy? Well, you got to do whatever it takes to be happy. But then we've seen there's a paradox to happiness. It's this, if I'm trying to be happy, why aren't I happy? Somehow by chasing happiness, we're guaranteed not to find it. And then thirdly, we discover, we need to flip the script. We shouldn't be chasing happiness. It's not about happiness. Instead, we should be living for others. It's not about happiness, but we also should be living for a bigger story than just our own. And Jesus is saying, you know what? It's not about happiness, but living in relationship with Jesus. Make Jesus the ultimate somebody in our life and living for Jesus. Make Jesus the ultimate story in our life. So where does that leave us here this morning? Well, you know, if we chase a rainbow, we can never find it. It just keeps moving further and further away. And that's because the rainbow is a byproduct of something else. The rainbow is a byproduct of the sun. If we chase the sun, we can actually find it. And we might find rainbows along the way. And it's the same, if we chase happiness, we won't find it. But happiness might just be the byproduct of something else. If we chase Jesus, the Son of God, we will find Jesus, and we might find happiness along the way. Now, one weekend, my wife and I were at home and we were cleaning the house. And I hate cleaning. There's something about cleaning that just sucks the soul out of me. So I came up with a brilliant idea. I said to my wife, hey, I've just come up with a great idea. How about you keep cleaning and I'll go surfing instead. And at the end, I'll come back and we'll celebrate that we've got a clean house. I'll take you out for dinner. And she gave me the, you can go if you want to answer. Now, to you single guys, that sounds like a yes. Go if you want to. But you married guys know, no, that is a no answer disguised as a yes answer. It's saying go if you dare. So I didn't dare because I knew no matter how fun the surf was, I would be miserable if I was out of relationship with my wife. And it's the same with life. No matter what we do, no matter what we own, until we know Jesus and have Jesus in our life, we stay miserable. Many years ago, I went on a ski trip. I did a 5-week ski instructor course at Whistler Blackcomb in the Canadian Rockies. And it sounded fantastic. For 5 weeks, I was going to live on snow, have the Canadian Rockies as my backdrop, catch chairlifts up and just ski endlessly, endlessly every day for 5 weeks. But after 1 week, I got bored. And after 1 week, I got lonely. And after 1 week, I thought, this is pointless. What is the point of skiing? If I don't go up the mountain, I don't have to come down the mountain. What is the point of this? There is no net distance gained. Why am I doing this? So I was lonely, I was miserable, and I had no purpose. So one night I opened the pages of my Bible and it fell open on this psalm. And this psalm said this, how lovely is your dwelling place, Lord Almighty. My soul yearns, even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. Better is one day in the presence of God than 1,000 days skiing the Canadian Rockies. And suddenly I realize again, it's not what we do that makes us happy. It's not what we own that makes us happy. It's do I have Jesus in my life? Is he my somebody to share my life with? Is he my story that I live for? I have at home a bottle of red wine that someone once gave me 10 years ago. And I know it's a good bottle of wine. And it just sits there in the kitchen. And people ask me, well, when are you going to drink that bottle of wine? And I always answer, because it's such a good bottle of wine, I'm just waiting for the right people to drink it with. I'm waiting for the right moment. And again, it's not about the wine. It's do I have somebody to share the wine with? Do I have a reason for drinking this wine? We need somebody. And we need a story in our life to be happy. And Jesus comes and he says, make me that ultimate somebody and make me that ultimate story that you live for. If we chase happiness, we will never find it. But if we chase Jesus, we will find him and he will find us. And happiness just might be a byproduct along the way.